If someone asked you what MS was, would you be able to explain it? It's okay if you can't. I sure couldn't. In fact, I had no idea what multiple sclerosis was until my doctor said I had it. I'm Andrea Dunn. I'm your host of a new podcast called This Is MS. I invite you to join me as I share inspiring stories of amazing people, young and old, who fight MS every single day and never let it define them, not for 1 minute. This Is MS is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your new favorite podcasts.
The Ryan Jesperson Show, weekday mornings at 9 on 630 CHED.
All righty. Greetings, friends. Danielle Smith here, sitting in for Ryan Jesperson just for a few more days. He'll be back with you again on Monday. We're going to deal with a couple of COVID stories today. And I always feel like I need to start off with just establishing where I'm at on this whole issue, because I know we've got, like with every issue, it's polarized. And so there are still people who are stuck in panic mode, thinking that we have to take the same kind of extreme measures that were recommended all the way back in March. And then there's those of us who think that maybe we went a little bit overboard. And now that we know more about this virus, we actually can start loosening up the economy. Now, here's the reason why I take the view that I do, is that we are still looking at the stats, and we are still seeing stories coming out about the crisis in long-term care facilities. So the story I saw today, 82% of the deaths have been in long-term care, which means by definition that 18% of the deaths were not. And even when you start looking at the whole profile of those who've died from COVID, you see that it's disproportionately those over the age of 70, disproportionately those with pre-existing medical conditions, in some cases three or more. The risk to everyone else under the working age people, young people, is tiny. And so this is why I am sort of perplexed, why we continue to act as if these measures should never come to an end. I don't know if I was on the show with you guys or if I just shared this with my Calgary audience, that we actually had a really bad influenza year, really bad. And influenza is just as dangerous to young people as it is to older people. We had young people dying of influenza. We have not had young people dying of COVID. There are some who are over the age of 16 who have pre-existing conditions, once again, who are just at risk as anybody else who has pre-existing conditions. But unfortunately, we don't get stats in Canada updated the same way they do in the United States. In the United States, they had 166 kids die of influenza. And we're not even talking about it. So this is what I'm sort of perplexed by, is if we're going to be instituting the kind of measures we're talking about, what's the end game? When do they end? Like, I'm fine with restrictions, but I need to understand, when do they stop? Because if they're not going to stop now, with all the information that we have about who is genuinely at risk, then when will they stop? So I just understand my skepticism going into the conversations that we're going to have today, because we're now moving to this new world where if you want to return to work, if you want to travel, you're going to have a fever check. Now, I don't know if you guys have experienced that yet. I had to go for a physiotherapy appointment when it was allowed a couple of weeks ago. And the experience was walking into the elevator, you go up the elevator, you've got hand sanitizer as soon as you get out, you do a little squirt, you grab a mask and you put it on, and then you go to the counter where they have a glass screen. And the attendant behind the counter comes around with a little fever gun and points it at your forehead, and you don't have a fever, so you're free to go in, walk on along the lines to a back room, so you're cloistered away from anybody else, and the physiotherapist comes in wearing a mask, and the procedure takes place. That was my experience. So this is, if you haven't gone through it, this is kind of what the new normal is likely to be like. No, they're not taking our temperature yet at grocery stores or at Costco or at retail stores or at restaurants. But this is, again, I think, some of the mixed messages that we're getting. Why do we require fever testing in some environments and not others? On planes, this is sort of the announcement that came down yesterday. we have a new approach that's going to be taken. Although, again, it's weird because it's, sorry, Edmonton, it doesn't sound like it's going to be implemented there until September. But in four cities, Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, and Calgary, in the departures area, they are also going to be doing the fever testing at the airport. And if you don't pass, you're going to have your ticket canceled at your own expense, and you're not going to be able to travel, it looks like, for 14 days. So they're already instituting this. It's coming in to Edmonton, I gather, in September. So the question is, how useful is this? How ubiquitous is this going to be? Is this going to be one of the requirements for all of us to return to workplaces? As you may know, across Chorus, we are all broadcasting from home. I have been since March. And so there's a few of us who are going into the station, but they're really isn't an expedited plan for a lot of folks who've been doing telecommuting to get back to work. And perhaps fever testing is going to become one of the ways in which you have a new return to work protocol. So what is that going to look like? How reliable is it? Who are the people providing these products? Well, one of them is my next guest. He is Paul Pacente. I've spoken with him before. He's president and CEO of Backwoods Energy Services, and he joins us now to tell us about his device. Paul, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, first of all, why don't you tell me a little bit more about how COVID has impacted your company? Because last time we spoke, I was just so amazed that in this downturn in the economy that we've had for 5 years, pre-COVID, your business was just growing by leaps and bounds. So how have you been impacted over these past few months?
Yeah, I think the combination, Danielle, of COVID and the tangential effect it had on oil prices, even negative oil prices, has affected us like most energy services companies in Alberta. Over the last 2 months, you know, for me as the CEO, the most challenging thing was just no line of sight, right? Like it was such a fluid thing, hour to hour, day to day. But I think as we've learned more, as you've been mentioning about the virus, as oil prices have normalized, as our customers have kind of gotten a grasp of what the future looks like, line of sight has been increased, and I think we're, you know, approaching an area which we can deal with and look forward to the rest of the year in a thoughtful and planned fashion.
I love your optimism. It's so nice to hear some optimism because there is a lot of pessimism out there. Okay, leaving aside my own personal feelings about whether we need to be temperature screening in everywhere, let's just talk a bit about the device that you have developed, because I've sort of thought of you as an oil and gas service company. So where does temperature screening come into your business model?
I'll give you the genesis, Danielle. So one of our divisions is security services. So early on in March, we started getting requests from customers to do these handheld temperature checks. And, you know, no one knew very much about things at the beginning of March. And we're saying, yeah, okay, a little uncertain of what the health effect on our security guards would be by doing that, and a little uncertain of how effective the screening was going to be. But it was certainly a need that we were getting on an ongoing and daily basis. So we did our research and said, look, these handheld things don't do what they're purported to do. If you just want the t-shirt and feel better, fine. If you actually want to affect proper temperature screening, then you have to do it a different way. So we looked around the world, we did our research, and we decided that and we came out with TempScout. And TempScout is a solution that's designed to be the kind of easiest and smartest way to integrate mass temperature screening in your health and safety program.
Okay, hold on, because there's a lot that you just put on the table there. Before you tell us a little bit more about your technology, just give me a better idea of what your requirement was. So you're saying you provide security guards at entrances to the sites, and as people are coming through with deliveries, that was when you needed to do your temperature screening?
Yeah, not even deliveries, but even workers coming onto the sites, they were being asked to stop and be temperature tested, as they are now.
So, tell us what the world looks like. Because, again, I have only had that one experience of going to one of these auxiliary medical offices of having temperature screening. How widespread has this been? Because you're quite right. We didn't shut down a lot of our sites in Alberta. That's one of the things that the premier has been saying, is that now others are kind of behind us and opening up, and it's because we didn't shut down as many sites. So how common has this been?
It's actually very common, not only on outdoor sites, but also we're deployed on some energy camps up north. We're deployed in food processing plants in the province. So anywhere where there's high volume traffic, and people working in close proximity with each other is a solution that works well for TemScout.
What is high volume? I'm sort of picturing where we had one of our big outbreaks at Cargill, and that was, I believe, 2,000 workers. But is it being deployed even at work sites that have fewer employees than that?
Yeah, like we've been doing some, we were starting to do the handheld testing where there was a few hundred employees on a daily basis, and TemScout is deployed at facilities where we're doing 400 an hour.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about this. First of all, the deficiency of the, I think of it as like a fever gun, because it kind of looks like a gun that they point at your forehead and then they take a temperature reading. What's wrong with that approach?
It's not accurate. It can't be used outside. And, you know, the closer you're in proximity with somebody else that's infected, the more risk to both people. And from a business standpoint, it's cumbersome. Whether you're at an airport or a work site, if you're trying to flow through hundreds of people an hour, and you've got to do one-on-one testing, you know, thermal or temperature testing with a handheld thermometer, you're going to have a backup that's going to cause undue delay to business operations.
No kidding. Okay, so tell us about TemScout. How did you find it? Let's talk about why it's different.
The best kind of state-of-the-art thermal imaging technology in the world. We looked at what other, you know, smart companies were deploying. We looked at, you know, companies like Google and Amazon and thinking, you know, they have infinite more resources. We kind of narrowed down what we were looking for in terms of accuracy and ability to deploy in our temperature. And then understood its limitations. So a couple of things, Danielle. One, it does not test fever. It simply tests elevated temperature. And I think this is a key aspect, whether you're in an airport or a work site. You need to do something beyond the initial test, which is what our solution does, is we use state-of-the-art thermal imaging technology with a black body reference camera, so you just walk through the thermal technology actually takes a temperature in the canthus of the eye, like the inner eye, as an initial setting. But once you test hot and that initial setting, it doesn't tell you enough. And that's why we've instituted secondary and tertiary protocols based on world screening standards like IEC and ISO standards, the last of which is a tympanic thermometer. And if you test all three hot, then, you know, you should be isolated and somebody should be contacted. But the ubiquitous notion of just having a temperature thermometer at your forehead or walking through a camera without anything, any secondary or tertiary protocols, just doesn't cut it from a workplace safety standpoint.
Wow, let me pause you for a minute, because I think this is going to be, it's going to be the new reality for us in some environments, certainly in an airport environment. I'm kind of interested in knowing whether or not they're taking the same kind of approach that you are, but I want to know a little more about how you deal with those secondary and tertiary levels of testing. Paul Pacente is my guest. He's president and CEO of Backwoods Energy Services. So this is already the reality. They've rolled it out, and it may be coming to a workplace near you. Stay with us. We'll continue the conversation on Chorus Radio. All right, welcome back. Yeah, how would you ever know I was working from home? You probably heard Colton Kane. That's the equivalent of a photobomb, is when your kids cry or your dogs bark while you're on the air. It's now a new occupational hazard. We are talking about occupational hazards with Paul Pacente, who's president and CEO of Backwoods Energy Services. They have a new approach for how they do mass testing for elevated temperature. And we're just sort of talking this through because it's already a well-established practice at the sites that he works on, and presumably some of the other sites around the province as well that have continued to stay in operation. Paul Pacente is president and CEO of Backwoods Energy Services. So Paul, one of the things you said is that you're checking for elevated temperature. Maybe we should understand a little more about what that means, because there is obviously a difference between a fever and elevated temperature, but what is the range? What is it that you're testing for? And then you can tell us what the secondary and third steps are.
Yeah, so we work with our clients to develop bespoke solutions depending on what their needs are. So we talk about, you know, the reference point that we want to test in terms of what temperature is going to be considered an alert. We take into account the variance in the plus or minus accuracy of the technology. And then we set it. Right now, most clients are set at 37.5 degrees C as an initial elevated temperature alert status.
What is a normal temperature? What is a non-elevated temperature?
Yeah, kind of 36.5 to 37 is generally considered as normal body temp.
Okay, so you go up to 37.5. I'm just thinking you've got a bunch of hardworking people doing heavy labor on a job site. Aren't you going to have an elevated temperature? Maybe I don't understand how that
works.
Yeah,
100%. And this is why some of these handheld solutions or just camera solutions, just walk through a camera, aren't accurate and aren't accurate enough anyway, Danielle. You could be carrying a cup of Starbucks into a workplace, and you're holding your Starbucks, and somebody shoots a thermometer at your forehead. You could test hot because of the heat. You could be coming out of a hot truck. You could have run around the job site or the facility or caught a bus, all of which could trigger an elevated temperature. So you transpose that to, I'm catching a flight, I've run into the terminal, I've got an elevated body temperature, somebody points something at my forehead, and now I'm going to miss my flight? Does that make any sense? I come into a facility, same situation, I have an elevated body temperature for some reason, I need the work, but now I'm being set aside and not allowed to work because I have a cup of coffee in my hand. So I think if we're going to change the way we do things, and I think there will be some long-lasting changes to public health and safety measures that we've learned coming out of COVID, I think we have to deploy a solution that's accurate and that works well for the employee and the employer.
I love what you're doing. Well, we'll continue to watch, because as more places return to work, they're going to have to develop these kinds of technologies. Paul Pacente is my guest. He's president and CEO of Backwoods Energy Services, just talking about what the new world of temperature screening might look like post-COVID.
The Ryan Jesperson Show, weekday mornings at 9 on 630 CHED.